My name is Naomi Porter. I'm 13 years old. Today is July 9th, and I'm speaking with Laura Hanley. We are recording this interview in Rancho Palos Verdes, California. Tell me a little bit about your childhood.
Well, I was actually raised in Palos Verdes. I was born in Japan. My dad was in the Air Force, and so my parents actually got married over there, and so I was born there, and they came back to California when I was 6 months old. And then we lived in Hermosa Beach until I was about four or five. And then my parents built a house up here in Portuguese Bend. So I basically grew up here, lived in PV until I went off to Berkeley after I graduated from high school. So anyway, it was a good child. I'm the oldest of five kids. So I was kind of the big sister. And there were a lot of us. There were five kids in 7 years, so it was, you know, kind of a, just kind of a big family. And I grew up Roman Catholic, so I went to St. John Fisher up on top of the hill, and went to parochial school through sixth grade, and then went over to, at the time, Margate was the intermediate school that's now PBIS, and then went to Merrill West High School and graduated from there. I don't know, let's see, we used to play, it was a much freer time for kids, and so my one sister that's just younger than I am, and another family that had a bunch of kids the same age, we used to play up in the hills here. We'd make forts and, you know, hike. We'd hike from Upper Portuguese Bend, like, down to Abalone Cove and have, like, breakfast on the beach, and we were just, it was just, you know, much freer time. It was, you know, your parents would say, go outside. And basically, you know, they didn't know what you were doing, or so it was just. But it was a great place to grow up, and it was good.
Okay, what toys did you play with?
What did I like? I mean, Barbies were big back then, so we definitely played with Barbies. I was very. I always wanted to be a doctor, and so some of my favorite toys were. I remember getting, what was it called, the human body. It was like a model of the human body that you painted the different organs and you could put it all together. And I think I got a microscope 1 year. I was a big reader. I constantly was reading. I was a pretty quiet kid. And so I just would read. We used to take the bus from school, and it would drop us off, and we had to walk home. I would walk home reading, and so books were a really big part of, you know, my childhood. Toys. Yeah, I would play, you know, I had a bike and rode around, and played a lot of board games, these three friends, my sister and I, so the five of us would play a lot. I would kind of go through, you know, different kind of series of playing different games. We play Canasta and Tripoli and poker and life and different games. So it was more, I don't remember a lot of toys. Did more playing than with toys, I'd say.
Can you tell me about one of the more difficult times in your life?
I've obviously, you know, I'm old enough that I've had a number of them, but probably one of the kind of the earlier difficult times was my parents got divorced when I was a sophomore in college, and it was like a total shock to me. I was up in Berkeley, and so I'd, you know, basically been, you know, out of the house for, you know, a year and a half or so. And one morning, early morning in my dorm, I got a phone call from my mom saying that she was serving my dad with divorce papers. And I was like, again, I was like totally shocked. I knew they kind of had some difficulties and stuff in the previous years, but it seemed like they were, you know, had kind of, you know, reconciled. And I remember seeing they'd gotten new, like, wedding rings for each other. So I kind of thought, oh, everything's fine. And so anyway, so I was really, really kind of shocked by that. And so that was really hard. It was, You know, I was already out of the house. All my other siblings were still at home. And so they kind of had to go through all the, you know, selling the house and figuring out where to, you know, the parents were going to live and who was going to live with whom and all of that. And I, you know, I didn't have to go through any of that. So it was just, but it was just, you know, it's just really hard. I mean, I think it's always hard on kids when their parents get divorced and no matter how old you are. So I was like 18 maybe. You know, so that was really hard, and I didn't really understand, you know, my mother's reasons for it, and, you know, so it was difficult for a long, long time.
What advice would you give to your teenage self?
I think I would have told myself, you know, find somebody that you can share what's going on with you, kind of a, you know, a safe person. I think I would also tell my teenage self, it's like, you know, this too shall pass. That, you know, things, particularly, you know, when you're a teenager, everything seems so big and kind of so, I mean, dramatic isn't quite the right word, but it just seems so big, and time is, particularly as compared to as you get older, I mean, time seems a lot longer, and like things last a lot longer. So I think I would just say, you know, this probably isn't as important or critical as it feels in the moment. So if you combine that with being able to talk to somebody, you know, kind of a, you know, hopefully a, you know, a wiser adult that can help you get some perspective. I think just, you know, would help smooth out some of the kind of inevitable bumps and challenging times as a teenager. I think it is really important to have, some adults besides your, I mean, it's great if your parents are the kind of people that you can talk to, but even if you've got great parents, it's still really helpful to have more of an outside person that you can talk to and can kind of see a part of yourself that, that maybe even your parents, you know, can't see. I had a person, it's so funny because I dreamt about her last night, that was kind of that person, one of the people for me, and she was, she kind of saw some things in me and was able to reflect some of those back to me that was really, you know, turned out to be very helpful in my life.
Can you tell me a little bit about your job?
My job, well, I'm officially retired now, so I'm not currently working for paid employment, but for when I was working, my most recent job was as a manager for Kaiser Permanente. I managed the addiction medicine department. So I supervised therapists and nurses and clerical staff, and then worked with physicians to kind of provide all the services for the Kaiser patients in our area that have problems with alcohol or any other substance, you know, illegal drugs or prescription pills, you know, anything that people were having problems with. So it was a lot of, there was kind of more the kind of the clinical part of it, but my job, kind of the last part of it, was much more administrative. So kind of supervising, and just there's all sorts of healthcare it's very regulated now. So there's all these things you have to make sure are happening. And then kind of going backwards, before that I was a therapist in addiction medicine. So I actually worked with, I ran groups and saw patients individually and kind of counseled them and did more education stuff around addiction and that kind of thing. And then before that, I worked at Little Company of Mary and did as kind of like a social worker. So I worked as a, like in the hospital, the acute care hospital, when people have, you know, problems and concerns, social workers kind of help them with that. So, for example, in the working with parents that have babies in the NICU and you know, or just different in the emergency room, there's some sort of crisis. And then before that, I had a private practice as a therapist, so I'd see, you know, clients then. And then I also did some kind of organizational development work, so in more in corporate settings, doing workshops and trainings and that kind of thing. What else have I done? But most of the work, so I'm trained and I've been licensed as a therapist for like 30 years. So most of what I've done has been, you know, kind of clinical counseling kind of work. Yeah, so that kind of, again, kind of backing up that when I went to college, I started off pre-med, and but I got, I was doing all the prerequisites, and in your sophomore year of college, you have to take organic chemistry, which is kind of the big test for most people if they can, you know, handle kind of those intense sciences and, that are prerequisites for med school. And I got halfway through organic chemistry. And I'm like, okay, I'm not getting kind of grades that are going to get me into med school. So that's when I kind of shifted and went more to psychology. And but I did some testing, like aptitude testing, career testing in college, and I scored like off the charts to be a nurse. And but I was, again, kind of young and a little, you know, somewhat immature, and my mother had been a nurse, and I was kind of at that place in my life where it's like, I didn't really want to be like my mother. And so I was like, no, I don't want to be a nurse. But it actually, in retrospect, I probably would have been, that would have been a really good route for me, because it would have combined kind of more the, you know, the medical thing that I'm still super interested in, and more the kind of the counseling piece of it. But I was, you know, I was more reactive back then. Right. So I just said, no. But anyway, so that's kind of the, you know, in general, the route that my professional career has taken. And even now, I've been retired for a year and a half, but I'm looking at doing more of a, I'm calling it wise advising, where it's not really therapy and it's not really life coaching and it's not exactly spiritual direction, but kind of a combination of all of those for people that are looking to either, you know, just kind of to grow mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, and are trying to navigate kind of a complex situation in their life. So maybe they've got you know, just a difficult relationship, or they've got a loved one that's, you know, dying, or they're trying to get a young adult out of the house, something that's kind of tricky, or they've got addiction in the family, something that's kind of tricky to figure out, to kind of walk alongside people in that way. So I'm working on setting up a kind of a practice doing that. So that's my new thing.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me about the most important lessons you've learned in life?
Oh gosh, so many. I actually write them down sometimes. I have a list of, like, you know, kind of principles or life lessons. A few of them are reality works, that, you know, kind of when in doubt, go for, you know, what is the truth? What is reality? And that even if it's difficult, that's ultimately what's going to work the best. So stay focused on what's, you know, what is reality? What is the truth of the situation? Another lesson I've learned is use experts. So to not feel like I have to know everything, because I obviously don't. I mean, I'm good at, you know, a few little very small areas of life, but there's so much to life that I've learned, be willing to use experts and ask for help. I mean, that's kind of embedded in that, is to be willing to ask for help. that, you know, self-sufficiency is highly overrated. You know, that it really, it takes a lot of, it takes a lot of help to get through life successfully. What else is on my list? Reality, yes, or help. I don't know, I have to go back and look at my list. I think, but you know, that again, being a person of faith, that too, just remembering that, you know, that God is God and I'm not, that there's a, I mean, I, you know, I really believe that there is kind of a, you know, a plan for our lives, that God loves us, that there's, you know, that He intends good for us. And that if I pay attention to that and try to kind of, you know, step in, you know, get in this, that stream of what God intends. I mean, I don't really believe that there is, you know, like a specific thing that God has planned out and that I have to like find out what that thing is. And if I don't find that particular thing, that somehow I've screwed it up or, but I think that, you know, kind of that God has a plan for us and that He uses all things for good. And so that there are, you know, choices that I make or situations, kind of things that life brings that God can use in my life. But it's being in tune with Him and being open to what God might have in store for me, and then being obedient to that. So kind of being listening for like a call, like come this direction, and then being willing to go that way. So I found there have been times in my life where I've been, you know, it's kind of more self-willed and say, no, I want to do it my way. And it you know, it ultimately probably, you know, wasn't the, you know, the best choice. And yet even in that, God had used that. So I think obedience is, you know, is a really important lesson that I've learned, to pay attention and then follow when I have some clarity about that.
What are you proudest of professionally or personally in your life?
I would say more personally, I'm really... I think I still am a really good mother. You know, I'm very proud of my daughters. And I feel like I've been a good mom. My mother was kind of challenged in that she had a very difficult, you know, upbringing. She was an only child. Her mother was alcoholic, and my mom said that she was more the adult at age 4 than her mother was. And so, that's not an easy way to grow up. And you make a lot of accommodations to deal with life when you kind of grow up in that environment. And it certainly impacted her, the way she parented me, particularly as the oldest daughter. And so I think I had a... she did the best she could. She did very well given kind of the limited examples she had. So I think even given that she, you know, she had her issues in terms of parenting, so I feel like, that I did a good job, you know, I did the best I could with what I was given too. And I think I did a good job, and, I'm really happy being a grandparent. I mean, it's a whole different role, and I think it's, and I'm also happy about, I have three, I call them bonus kids. They're my husband's three children, and so I'm their bonus mom, and they're my bonus kids. And that can be a difficult relationship sometimes to navigate, and I think I've done a good job with that. And I think also navigating the, I got, so I divorced from Ann and Mary's dad after we'd been married for 20 years. And, you know, it wasn't really, you know, wouldn't have been my first choice. I mean, I never envisioned myself being divorced, and certainly kind of having that happen to my kids, you know, which was very difficult. But I think kind of navigating that relationship and getting through the divorce, took a long time, but I was really happy that I kind of got through that and have a really a wonderful second marriage, and work very intentionally on having that be a good marriage. So I'm really happy about that. So I would say overall, it's relationships that I'm, you know, the proudest of, and even professionally, I think that's again the relationship pieces. I always felt like it's really important to be a kind of a mentor to other, like particularly managers, like young managers, and so supporting them and finding kind of being actively kind of seeking them out to say, how can I help you in this, or you know, that kind of thing. So I feel like I've done well in my life in relationships, and I'm happy about that.
Can you tell me about your involvement with St. Peter's?
Oh my gosh, I've been here 34 years, I think. It came when Anna was two, and she just turned 36, so 34 years. And involvement wise, I've pretty much done just about everything at one point or another at St. Peter's. I've been an elder, I think, three times. I've been a deacon. I was chair of personnel in a very interesting time of the church a long time ago. It was a very complicated time in the church. We had a counseling service here at one time that I was part of. For the kids, I've taught Sunday school, taught classes, been members of small groups. So it's been a really important part of my life for a long, long time. I obviously raised my girls here, and I actually worked for the church for a year. I was for a while we had a position called Director of Lay Ministry, and I was the first Director of Lay Ministry, and I did it on a volunteer basis for a year, and then there's a whole complicated story about what happened with that. But so I worked for the church, and it just, again, it's been just a really important kind of part of my life, and kind of a touchstone for for my life, with all its with all its ups and downs. It's my church family, and it's just like your biological family. Some people say, I don't like this church, I want to go get another church. And I'm more of the mind. For the most part, you don't do that with your family. You can say, I don't like my family, but it's kind of hard to just dump them and go find a new family. And so I'm kind of more of the mind that this is my church family, and for good or bad, it's, we're attached. And, I do try to focus on, okay, what's my part in making it better and making a contribution. So it's been a really important part of my life.
How has St. Peter's been a meaningful place for you?
Well, it's been, I think, meaningful because I think it has helped. It's just been the environment where my faith has grown, and where basically I've experienced life. And so, my kids, were little. So when we started here, Anna was two, and, so going through, Sunday school, and we used to have a Tuesday afternoon, kind of a mom's group when the kids were in the music program. And so it's just, it's been kind of my closest friends have all pretty much come from the church. And so that, and they've been there for, you know, so like when I went through my divorce and when, I mean, like a really concrete example of how, you know, like how the church has been there, our small group. My mom died kind of suddenly 6 years ago. She had a cerebral hemorrhage and basically lived for a couple of days and then died. And when we had this, we had the service here, we were having kind of, we were going to have a dinner up at my sister's house afterwards. And, but we were all, the family were coming from the burial and all of that. So I asked, and my small group basically responded, and they basically like showed up at the house and brought, you know, brought dinner and, you know, just kind of took care of that. And it, you know, so being there in times of, you know, challenging times, I watched last year, you know, my friend Karen died, and, you know, it was kind of a long process, and she required a lot of help for quite a long period of time. And so just watching how the church and her group of friends from the church kind of, you know, just gathered around her day in and day out for, you know, weeks and months, really, of doing things from, you know, walking her dog and going to the grocery store and, you know, sitting with her watching movies and, you know, all the way up until the very end when she actually passed. I mean, that was, you know, to a large degree, the people that were there were her church family. And so to me, that's really meaningful and what church is about. And I honestly don't know how people get through those kinds of things, you know, without having a church family. Because even if you've got a supportive family and, you know, nuclear or biological family, it's just, it's too, you know, it's too much. And so I just am astounded how people get through, you know, tragedies and very difficult things without, you know, without a church family. It's, I don't know how they do it, because it's hard enough even with that kind of support. So I'd say that's kind of the, probably the most meaningful thing, is just that sense of community and people being there, good times and bad.
What important lessons has your religion, Christianity, taught you, and how has it shaped your life?
I think most fundamentally that there is meaning to life, that there, it's not just some random fact that we're here, and that we're here, and, you know, when we die, that it's all over. I mean, I really believe that there's a much deeper meaning and purpose to our lives, and that it's our whole existence and the existence of the world and the universe is based on, you know, the will of a God who loves us and wants to have a relationship with us, which is, you know, a totally mind-boggling concept, that the God of the universe, you know, wants to have an, you know, an intimate, loving relationship, you know, with me and you know, and all of his creation. So I think that with that as a foundation, it helps kind of put, you know, put perspective into life, and that, again, that there's a way to kind of understand, you know, what life is and what happens and that kind of thing. And that even, you know, bad things that happen and you know, being able to understand, I mean, I really believe, there's certainly evil in the world, and, you know, and I really believe that there's a kind of like a personal evil, you know, that the Bible talks about the devil or Satan, that there's kind of a personified evil that has a certain limited amount of power in the world, that ultimately God, you know, has greater power than evil, but that for kind of in a contained kind of way, there is personal evil. So to me, that helps kind of explain, you know why some people, you know, do horrible things, and that also that our creation is broken as well, and so that, you know, things like earthquakes and hurricanes and things that cause terrible tragedies are somehow a reflection that our world is broken as well. So for me, my faith helps put kind of a big umbrella understanding about around life. And then you know, talked about earlier that just that more the day-to-day things of, you know, how my particular life goes, and then you know, how I'm supposed to interact with people, and that kind of thing gives me, it's just kind of it's a foundation.
What changes do you see for kids growing up now in contrast from your childhood?
Oh, I think that the biggest thing is kind of what I was saying earlier, that I mean, children have so much less freedom and autonomy today than you know, certainly I had, or even, you know, that my kids had. And I think it's really sad and detrimental to young people's sense of well-being and esteem, and being able to feel like they have some competency and some way to make their way in the world. I look at, you know, I don't think a lot of kids are allowed to experience the consequences of their own choices as much, and things are made to a large degree, it's like too easy for kids. And then by the time when they get to adulthood, when they're, you know, kind of have to engage in the world, it's like, oh my God, I don't know how to do anything. And I look at some of the young adults, like in the, you know, young to mid 20s that I know, and they're still being supported financially by their parents. I'm just like, I'm kind of like horrified by it, because I was married and I had a child by the time I was 25. And my parents certainly were not, I mean, not that parents didn't help in certain ways. I think parents have always done that, but they certainly weren't paying my rent, you know, when I was 25. And I don't think it's good for people to be like, to not feel like they can make their own way in the world. And I think a lot of that starts super early, and a lot of parents, again, they fix stuff for their kids. It's, you know, back to the basic of, you know, you forgot your homework at home, and does the parent run it to, you know, drive it to school for you, or do you let the child, you know, experience the consequence of not bringing your homework, you know, whatever that is? And I think people say, oh, they're just little, they don't, and when they get older and stuff, but then that never happens. And so they end up, you know, parents end up filling in all the gaps and keeping it so easy that I think kids are shocked when they get out into the real world and find, okay, it's not that easy. And it would have been a lot better if parents had, when they were littler and the consequences are less, to let kids experience a lot of those consequences, and so that they, you know, grow up and being, you know, competent. I can handle this. I can figure this out. So I think that's the biggest thing. And I think it's huge. And I don't know what the answer is, but it makes me very nervous for children growing into adults to a large degree.
Okay. Can you tell me about a favorite memory or story that you have?
Well, I had one this weekend that was very important, I think, for me. I killed a rattlesnake all by myself.
Wow.
I know. And it was, I decided it was kind of, for me, like a, what I imagine for some people, like doing a fire walk is, or one of these, like, kind of an experience that is kind of scary, and you think, well, you could get hurt or it could turn out badly, and yet you do it anyway. So we were up in the mountains, and there was a rattlesnake that it was actually when I first saw it, it came out of the kind of the basement door, and it was in, there's a, like a drain pipe kind of half buried in the ground, and I saw its little head sticking out, and I knew right away it was a rattlesnake, and I thought, well, but it wasn't out quite far enough for me to get like the shovel behind its head. And so I kept kind of coming back to see if it had stuck its head out a little bit more so I could kind of get behind it. Because that would have been a super easy way if it had just stuck its head out far enough, because the rest of the body was in the pipe and it really couldn't go anywhere and I could get behind it. But when I came out, because I was checking on it like every 15 minutes or so. So when I came out again, I saw it had gotten out of the drain pipe and gone up the bank, kind of underneath the deck. And I really didn't want it to go under the deck because that was, because you just don't want snakes around the house if there's kids and dogs and stuff. And so I had my shovel and I was able to kind of keep it from going under the deck. But it coiled up kind of against the concrete wall, and, it did all, its hissy stuff. And so I sat there for 20 minutes and it just stayed put. I was trying to figure out, how am I going to get to it? And because you really want to go behind it, not approach it, forward where it can, where it could strike. And so I kind of sat for a long time, and it wouldn't really, I was trying to get it to move down where I have a little more access to it. And it threw rocks at it, just like stayed put. But I finally saw that there was kind of where the basement wall came out a little bit. So I was able to kind of get behind the wall a little bit, and the snake was here. And so I stood there for a long time, and I was having that meta thought, like observing myself in the situation. And I realized that it's like, I had to take action, right? I had the shovel, and at some point I was going to have to actually do something, to kill the snake. And it took me a while to actually kind of think about it long enough to do it and to kind of psych myself up for it. And I had to kind of think, well, okay, what if my, think of like Hannah, my granddaughter, if she was, in any sort of danger, I would do this kind of thing. And the thought was, well, what if, the hesitation was, well, what if I miss? What if I don't, get it? And then what's going to happen? Then somehow I'm going to be in more danger or whatever. And so I just finally, at some point, I just had to make the decision to go for it. And the thing is, I did miss the first time. I only got its body. I didn't get, you want to get it right behind the head there at the neck. And but I missed the first time. And so, but again, I think it must have just been kind of automatic. So I was able to, because it, was not happy that I got its body and not, so it was like, but I was able to then, like almost automatically, just go, and I did get it, behind the, behind its head there. And it was, Dean had been off cutting trees down, and it was like right at that minute he came back. I could hear him in the Jeep coming around. And so I'm just standing there with the, the shovel behind its neck. And so he was able to, of course, take a picture of it, and then we took care of it, chopped off the head and did all of that, and cut off the rattles. But it was memorable because, one, I learned, okay, it was kind of my, my fear in the situation, I was gonna miss, and that would, be a bad thing. But the truth of the matter, I did miss, and it still worked out okay. And the other lesson was, I couldn't just sit there and think about it. I had to do something. Right. And so, so it was quite a memorable experience.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your time. Mm-hmm.